Greetings and welcome to Chief Mike Koval's podcast. I'm Joel Despain, Public Information Officer for the Madison Police Department, and it is good to have you joining us. Welcome, Chief.
Good morning, Joel. I'm not used to seeing you quite so vigorous in the mornings.
We can say it's 2 or 3 a.m.
Oh, that's true.
It's about 8 in the morning, but we're podcasting a little earlier than usual, but I think we're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
I've got the kickstart pulsing through my veins. Yeah.
You know, and I've noticed over the time that you've been here, Chief, that your uniform's a little different than some of the other chiefs in that you don't have all that brass on your uniform. You sewed on patches that say Chief Mike Koval and these stars and all that. Why'd you do that?
Because when you launder your own gear, it's easier to...
That's what I thought. It's a laundry issue, isn't it?
It's always about the
low maintenance. You have to take stuff off. I thought you only had one uniform.
No. Well, I might. I can get dressed in the dark, and I know I'm not going to get it wrong.
So that's correct.
It's easy.
All right, but you do have the badge on, so
yes.
You do have to take that off
when
you launder the shirt. Yeah.
Yes.
So, I know one of the top priorities when you took over the job was to start a mental health officer team, and we do have one now, and it's expanding, and it's doing very well. I think we're getting a lot of national kudos for it, but give me your thought process as to why this was necessary to put this team together, and tell us a little bit about the team.
Well, let's use a little historical context too, if I may, Joel, just before we launch fully into that. We have seen, as a profession, families and friends, everyone is touched by a loved one, someone close to them who has some mental illness because of some very long-standing issues of going back to as they were children. Sometimes it's later onset. But every time I've ever done a neighborhood forum, I always find that there's someone who lingers a little longer after everyone else has gone. And they contact me, and typically it's very herky-jerky, episodic, haltingly speaking, oftentimes with tears, talking about a reflection of someone close to them, where they're concerned because they're experiencing episodic breaks, not taking medication, not going to appointments, undiagnosed, have fallen between the cracks. And we have seen this storyline played out time and time again. And as the officers will tell you, many times those calls, which are the most labor-intense, resource-rich, are those who have mental illness and are acting out in some form that's resulting in behavior that's being reported to us that, while arguably might be prohibited by state statute, there's something going on above and beyond the behavioral manifestations. There's something going on with the affect as we engage with these folks, and we realize that this isn't someone, a candidate that's suitable for the criminal justice system with an arrest record and a court proceeding. This is someone who's in need of an intervention, of some sort of a plan that deals to the root or the crux of the problem, as opposed to only taking the shortcuts of manifestations of behavior. So going back a couple of years now, we have had, as a department, mental health liaisons assigned around the clock.
This was prior to the team.
Absolutely. In which officers who had an affinity for these calls, sometimes it's because of their training, many times it's because of life experiences, a family member, a friend who has experienced mental illness. And in any event, it has sort of whet their appetite for this particular variety of calls or persons. And they would often jump those calls as they would hear them, and still do to this day, and provide the additional time and effort and insight as to what we have in terms of community resources, so as to try to create the best possible resolution for these instances. Unfortunately, though, as I took the realm of chief 3 years ago, I also saw that a lot of the most, unfortunately, critical, officer-involved shootings, more often than not, dealt with people who had literally reached epic proportions of dysfunctionality because of a mental illness. I was chief 3 days when the gentleman at Milwaukee in East Washington stabbed three, killing two women, And his was a literally a crisis of mental illness.
And we'd been working with him, as I remember.
Absolutely. But again, had not reached those legal thresholds where we could do more. And so it has been on my radar for decades, but it really synthesized itself quickly in 3 days to realize that. And so in that sense, working then with a very motivated woman that I ultimately promoted to captain of outreach services, Kristen Roman, then my captain, now, of course,
UW Police Chief.
I basically told her that I wanted us to do something radically different. And I told my command staff that the cavalry was not coming through that door. We were not seeing the state coming through with resources. The county was not being able to help us. The city, of course. Everybody is attempting to do more with less. And unfortunately, mental health was getting lost in the scuffle.
And a lot of times our officers are the first on the scene when someone is having some sort of crisis.
More often than not.
Right.
So as a result, I told each district commander effective in 2015 that they would all be forfeiting one patrol position to go into a unit that I was going to do nothing but preemptive and collaborative mental health intervention work. And initially, from my own captains, there was incredible pushback. And I said, nope, this is the decision going forward, so we're going to make it work. I then invested Kristen Roman, then our captain, with the capacity to create this model of mine that I'd had as a vision and to see it through to its implementation. And the result is, today, fast forward, is we each district has a full-time mental health officer. And as you will be learning later in the podcast, we are now sort of embedding, if you will, I'll use that word loosely, but we have a clinician from Journey Mental Health. Mm-hmm.
Sarah Hendrickson, who will join us later. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Saint Sarah, as I call her, because the woman is just phenomenal. And she sort of gets the cop culture. She has worked with us over the years in her pro forma position with Journey. And I'm so glad that when the call to arms sort of went out, that she was willing to look at this pilot project as an opportunity to do even more in terms of outreach and intervention on the streets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to be clear. These mental health officers are not clinicians in the sense that they're doing diagnostics and treating people. That's above our job dimensions. What they are doing is that they're highly motivated, highly trained people working in conjunction with trained clinicians like Sarah at Journey to try to find what's the best case scenario, what's the least restrictive alternatives that we can do to keep people out of the criminal justice system and connected and absolve them from falling between the cracks of a mental health system, which, quite frankly, it's in tatters.
Right. And what's been the reaction across the country to this program? It seems like we're getting a lot of accolades for the program, and others are sort of taking a look at what we're doing.
Oh, I think we have already been identified on a national plane before formally going to this program as one of six model institutions for how we teach crisis intervention techniques. So we're a model teaching facility for that. All of our officers have incredible training in it. But you're right, this has now become a centerpiece in our state, and it's radiating to the Midwest. We are now training the trainers, and a lot of people are asking. We just hosted a couple of weeks ago a contingent from St. Paul, Minnesota, that is eager to hatch something similar to our pilot. But again, the greatest testimonial is that we're keeping people out of the criminal justice system. We're making for better fits in terms of what's sensible, what's reasonable, and what's least restrictive. And I think people are getting the help before it reaches episodic crisis. We're being more preemptive.
And this is a question for you that I can't ask Sarah. What's this doing in terms, you think, for the crime rate, in terms of keeping people from committing crimes? What's it doing for patrol services in terms of officers getting to other calls?
It's definitely steering calls away from patrol services that otherwise would have landed in their laps. And quite frankly, patrol services are only equipped to do triaging, putting band-aids on where, in fact, a major surgery or a tourniquet is required. The beauty of the mental health officers working in conjunction with someone like Sarah is that we can do long-term, much more appropriate sort of resolutions.
Well, I think it's probably appropriate then that we bring Sarah to the microphone, call her in, and get her thoughts.
Well, the ratings of the program are about ready to go infinitely through the roof with her, thanks to my relinquishing the chair to her. Right. Good luck, Sarah. You can only do better.
Thank you, Chief. So Sarah Hendrickson is joining us. Sarah is a crisis worker with Journey Mental Health Services and the first civilian social worker to be embedded, as the chief said, a kind of a loose term with the MPD. And Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And so you've been with the MPD, working hand-in-hand with us for about a year now?
Working out of the police department about a year. For about 6 or 7 years, I've been the law enforcement liaison for Journey Mental Health and the crisis unit. So being kind of that point person for all Dane County law enforcement agencies for issues related to mental health consumers in their community, whether it's kind of system issues or following up on difficult cases or things like that.
You can give the listeners a sense of your background and what you bring to the table.
Sure. So I'm a licensed clinical social worker, which means I have my master's degree in social work and a clinical license in addition to that. I've been working at Journey Mental Health since 2000, so it'll be 17 years in August. Started out working in the youth crisis unit, which does not actually exist as a separate entity anymore. It was absorbed into the larger 24-hour crisis unit that serves all ages for all mental health consumers in Dane County.
And what's it been like to join in with the MPD a little more intricately, if you will? Has it been a big difference from where you were a couple of years ago and what you were seeing and how those in the street were getting services?
Well, I think being part of the mental health officer team, I mean, as I said, we've worked, the crisis unit in general has worked collaboratively with all local law enforcement agencies for years, and I think for the most part been pretty effective in that collaboration. But to kind of take it a step further and be located within the department and working side by side with the mental health officer team primarily, but also as a resource to the department. I mean, I've had anywhere from sergeants to detectives to, you know, other personnel, command staff, consult with me about cases that have come to their attention where they want to get that kind of clinical perspective on the individuals that they're dealing with and, you know, having some concerns about. And I think that has really improved the awareness of mental health issues and understanding of those issues around the department to have that kind of, you know, really close consultation going on. But the majority of the work, of course, that I'm doing is in that outreach that the chief referred to that the mental health officer team does. And to have that flexibility to be here and focus entirely on those cases of folks who are coming to police attention with a whole variety of mental health issues that may or may not have reached an acute crisis point yet, but they're still coming to police attention. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to get involved a little earlier and trying to connect people to the services and resources that they need so that we can prevent things from reaching that crisis point and or prevent them from ending up in the criminal justice system.
What does this mean for those people, obviously, and then their families to have this team in place and to have you working with that team?
Well, I think awareness of our team has grown a lot. You know, the officers themselves have been in place for a little over 2 years, and I've been part of the team for a little over 1 year. And even in the time that I've been on board, I've seen a big increase in just families and community members reaching out to our team because they have a loved one who, you know, lives in the city that has mental health issues that they maybe are anticipating that the person is going to have police contact, or they're concerned about their loved one's safety and want us to reach out to that person. Sometimes there are people who, the folks who are contacting us don't actually live in Madison, but their loved one does, and they've, you know, somehow learned about our team and they're reaching out to us to say, can you help us, you know, make contact with or you know, check on or connect this person to services with this loved one that we're concerned about.
And are you seeing a lot of successes?
Yeah, I have, you know, a ton of stories kind of in my head all the time that I would love to share with people. I think my favorite examples of what I consider a success are situations where, you know, again, either it's a matter of that we've intervened early before things have reached a crisis proportion, and it can be something where, you know, as the chief alluded to earlier, where, you know, patrol doesn't really have, because they're driven by so many calls for service, they may not have the time or resources to, you know, really address the root of the problem that's causing a person to come to their attention. So, for example, a person who contacts the police because they're having paranoid, delusional thoughts about being, you know, monitored or harassed in some way that doesn't appear to be based in reality, this person is not causing any risk of harm to other people. They're feeling very unsafe, and they're calling police because the nature of their perception of the situation is something that you would call the police for, not something you would call a mental health provider for. And we're able to, you know, whereas the patrol officer taking that report and kind of quickly determines, no, there's not somebody breaking into this person's apartment or whatever the report is, right, but doesn't have the, you know, the ability to kind of continue on with it from there, we go and follow up with those folks because they're brought to our attention either by reviewing a report or by the officer who responded, you know, bringing it to us and saying, I think this person needs some help. And we go and reach out to that person and try, you know, to kind of slow things down. We have the luxury of time to look at what is going on with this person, what resources do they have, what gaps are there, what can we fill with other resources, what connections can we make, and try to get them connected to services. And we've had a lot of successes with those types of cases.
So you're really improving the quality of life for these people.
That is the goal. And again, a part of improving quality of life, of course, is preventing people from getting to a crisis point or ending up in jail. And that's another thing that we take a lot of pride in, is any time that, you know, we have a case where it could have gone the criminal justice route, but because of our intervention and or our knowledge of the person that has been disseminated among patrol staff that, you know, has made it clear that this person is suffering a mental health crisis and we want to address the problem with treatment, not with punitive consequences, those types of diversions from criminal justice to mental health treatment are also cases that we have a lot of pride in.
So now that you're with the police department, Sarah, does that mean that you can share freely those records housed at Journey Mental Health and provide some of those backgrounds to people and what might be contained in those records?
Well, I, even though I am working out of the police department, I am still an employee of Journey Mental Health, and I am a mental health clinician bound by HIPAA and by the confidentiality requirements of Journey Mental Health. So no, I cannot share information any more freely than I could working out of Journey Mental Health. However, I, being in the unique position of having access to Journey Mental Health records and Madison Police records, I can sometimes put that information together, kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together to help inform how we respond to a mental health consumer without actually sharing information from their clinical record with the mental health officers or any other personnel at the police department. The other thing is that in situations where we're going out and proactively doing home visits with people based on police reports, and I may be working to, you know, get them connected with services, we make it a habit to ask the folks that we're meeting with if they would be willing to sign a release of information that is very limited to just, you know, need to know for the mental health officers to just know that the case is being followed up on, that the person is safe, that type of thing. So not diagnosis and in-depth treatment records, but just a very basic consultation about what the plan is for the person. And that I'm always pleased that, you know, for the most part, I think people understand the purpose of that and are usually willing to sign those releases. But of course, there's no pressure for them to do that. And if they refuse, that's totally fine. And then those confidentiality limits remain.
But those medical records remain confidential. They're not shared with police.
That's correct.
So I think there could be, and I don't know if this to be the case, naysayers out there would say, well, this isn't really police business. This should be left to professionals like yourself to deal with people who are maybe going into crisis at some point. What would be your response to that as you've seen this work in the field and working with police?
I would say that by default, a lot of these people are, I mean, just look at the example I gave of someone who, you know, is calling police because they believe that they're being, you know, harassed or threatened in some way that is not based in reality. that person doesn't have the insight to reach out to a mental health provider because they're not perceiving that the problem is a mental illness. And so, yes, of course, we would love to address those people's issues, get them connected to treatment and improve their quality of life without involving police. But the nature of the case is such that police are becoming involved before we maybe even have the chance to know about the person. I would really like to emphasize that, you know, the vast majority of, you know, we know statistically that folks with mental illness are much more likely to be victims of violence or victims of a crime than perpetrators mm-hmm. of it. So when we talk about safety issues related to people with mental illness, we're not just talking about them being violent, we're talking about them being vulnerable and needing help. And so,
and can the team work with those people as well?
Absolutely. And it just kind of runs the gamut, people of all ages, all different types of diagnoses. And, you know, as the chief also referred to, that, you know, we have a lot of good services in Dane County, but I think it's a somewhat fragmented service system. It's very complicated to navigate. And so one of the advantages with the mental health officers and myself with our team working together is that we have taken the time to put together a greater knowledge of resources than probably what the average patrol officer has the time to assimilate, because that's the focus of our work day in and day out. And so we may have a little bit better ability to connect people to those services.
So beyond Journey Mental Health, there are a lot of other community partners that you work with in connecting these people to services.
Absolutely. Lots of different, case management agencies, treatment providers, housing services, all different types of services that we work with to try to connect people to services. And in addition to just within the mental health officer team, the liaisons and even other, you know, patrol officers and who are having contact with consumers in the community benefit from the knowledge that our team shares with the larger department and can provide as a resource to those officers coming into contact with folks in the community.
And are the members of the team that you're working with, are these officers that have special training, unique backgrounds, or how would you describe the members of the team?
Well, I would describe them as really dedicated and incredible folks to work with. I'm very pleased with the makeup of our team. There is no requirement that these officers have, specific clinical training, although some of them have some background prior to becoming a police officer with some mental health related work. And I think that's reasonable, because I don't think we can't expect any one profession to be an expert in across all professions. I am not a police officer. I'm not trained in tactical deployment or things that, you know, to address certain unsafe situations or things like that. I don't have that training, and I fully acknowledge that. And police officers, while the mental health officers have gained additional knowledge of resources and mental health issues, they're not trained clinicians, nor should we expect them to be. And so that's where the collaboration, I think, is so useful and effective in that way.
And it must be working, because you're adding more clinicians, is that right?
That's right. So we got additional funding from the county to add two more people in my position. And we have one on board training, and we'll hope to be adding another one very soon.
And do you see what's taking place here, and I don't know how much you follow other programs around the country, is it unique what's happening in Madison? Are we a model for the country, or are we following others, or where were we at with that?
We literally are a model for others in the country, because the Madison Police Department has been designated as one of six learning sites by the Bureau of Justice Assistance for mental health and policing, which means that, for example, when the chief talked about the department from St. Paul coming to visit, other departments in the country can get help from the federal government to send their officers or their administrators to come visit Madison and learn about our program. We did something similar before I started in this position. I went with Captain Roman and another Journey employee to Houston, which is one of the other learning sites, and we spent a few days there learning about their program, observing what they do, went on ride-alongs with their mental health officers. And, you know, what we learn and what I would imagine any of these visits would kind of lead to is that there are components of programs that you like and that you think would apply well to your agency and others that don't. I mean, just the sheer size of Houston versus Madison, right. There are a lot of things that they implement that we simply couldn't, and different kind of issues within those communities that are coming to the forefront. And so, you know, we took what was useful from that and, you know, applied some of that here. And we're also seeing just on a local level that many of the surrounding jurisdictions around Madison, such as Sun Prairie, Middleton, Fitchburg, other departments are developing their own mental health liaison program in a way that suits their agency. And all of these surrounding agencies are invited to a meeting that we are holding quarterly. It's an all-day meeting where we have networking opportunities and educational opportunities where we bring in experts to talk about a variety of issues that affect folks with mental illness. We have a psychiatrist that comes in. We have actually our next meeting is tomorrow, and we have a few people coming in to talk about homelessness issues and resources and different things like that. And there's just this great hunger and desire for that information among local law enforcement agencies that I find really encouraging.
Because I was reading and seeing some of the things that your team's been doing, and including working with veterans and a number of sort of individualized groups that might have unique needs in terms of mm-hmm. mental health assistance.
Yeah, each of the mental health officers has identified one or two areas that they would like to specifically focus on in terms of knowledge that they gain and resources that they know about and can share with consumers. So, like, for example, one, you know, focuses on veterans issues, one focuses on dementia and Alzheimer's, and that's not to say that the other mental health officers, or for that matter the patrol officers, don't have some training in those issues, but it allows them to really kind of focus some of their learning and their work on those issues that are of particular interest to them.
I think that's also important to point out what you just mentioned, and that is that all patrol officers have training in dealing with people with mental health issues. It's not just the people who are on the team.
That's correct, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I've heard it many times that there's a certain number of hours of training for police officers required, I believe, statewide. And whatever that number is, the Madison Police Academy exceeds that by quite a great amount just in the academy training. So, you know, this is a good opportunity maybe to just mention, too, about kind of how the mental health officer team works, in the sense that most of the work we do is you know, proactive outreach. Like I had talked about, the mental health officers generally are not dispatched to calls. They and myself will plug ourselves into calls as they're occurring if we're available and able to help out or have some knowledge or resources to apply to the situation. But sometimes you know, a call will come into dispatch. A family member may ask, you know, could I have a mental health officer dispatched to my loved one? And I think it's important for folks to know that there is a minimum amount of training that all Madison police officers have related to mental health issues, which is continually, you know, added to as they have in-service trainings throughout the year and things like that. So an analogy that I like to use to kind of explain this is, if you were to go to an emergency room because you were having a heart attack, and there happened to be a cardiologist on staff who knew a lot about how to address this problem, you'd be thrilled. But you would also expect that any physician in the ER that sees you would have the fundamental training to address your problem and treat you. And so I kind of liken that to how the mental health officer team works in the Madison Police Department.
And what's the workload like out there for the team right now?
Oh my gosh. It always feels like there's so many things going on and things that we want to get to, and then, you know, your day shifts as priorities change. And I mean, there could be a day where we have some home visits planned and it all gets thrown out the window because of a crisis situation that comes up that, you know, we want to deal with, and we want to be that, you know, resource both to the consumer, the family members, the community, the patrol officers, you know, responding to the situation. So there is definitely way more than enough to keep us busy, that's for sure. And it's a matter of, you know, on a day-to-day basis, kind of prioritizing what we're going to focus on.
And are there enough resources, do you think, in terms of just the team? Does it need to grow even more? What would be the ideal? Are there, you know, people out there that aren't getting services because there just isn't still enough help for them?
Yeah, I mean, I would never suggest that we don't need more resources in any venue. I think some of the challenges that our team faces is when we've identified a consumer, a person who has some unmet needs, and we can't get them connected to resources for a variety of reasons. It could be that something about what type of insurance coverage they have dictates where they can get this or that service, and they're kind of falling through the cracks. It could be that the person is not willing to pursue services or accept treatment, and they've not met that threshold under Chapter 51 state statutes that allow us to intervene with somebody who is an imminent danger to themselves or others and is refusing treatment. There are a lot of people who fall below that threshold who are really struggling, having a poor quality of life, but do not have the insight and judgment to recognize that need for treatment or accept the services that are being offered. Those are probably the most heartbreaking cases. So what resources could we add to address that? I'm not sure exactly, mm-hmm. but I think one of the things that we find with our team is that even if we can't get a person, moving in that direction of getting the services that we think would benefit them, that doesn't mean that we just kind of throw up our hands and we're done then. We might continue to check back with that person. We might, either just taking our own initiative to do that or seeing additional police reports that come through, trying to connect with other resources that might help us kind of get that person to move in that direction of accepting help. It can be a slow, very slow but ongoing process that we're, continually working at, and that of course could always benefit from additional resources.
And is there any way to quantify how many people you've helped, how many you're helping, how many are in need? How many calls are sometimes mental health related?
Well, and the Madison Police Department does have a mechanism for tagging or labeling reports that are generated from cases as having some mental health component. And then those are divided by the district in which the person resides or the situation occurs. And being the person who sees all of those reports, because I work with the whole city, I can tell you that I get dozens daily of reports, case reports forwarded to me that involve some component of mental health. So that kind of gives you an idea of the magnitude of it.
I would think the job might be a little bit overwhelming, but at the end of the day, probably pretty satisfying, and particularly when you have been able to help somebody.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yeah, well, Sarah Hendrickson, thank you so much for joining us on Chief Mike Koval's podcast. I'm Joel Despain, and we'll see you on the next podcast.